Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, you can call me Xanthi, and today's episode is based on minutes 116 through 120 of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. In this set of minutes, Snoke's lower half falls from his throne with a thud, Kylo force chokes Hux, and the Resistance starts setting up on Crete, the Salt Planet, and former Rebel outpost. My guest today is Chris Radke, otherwise known as Radke, and a Star Wars Minute VIP, whom I'm very excited to talk about, and is much funnier than me. Hello, hello, Radke.
It's so great to be here. I love The Last Jedi so much, and I will take any opportunity I can to talk about this wonderful film. So, yeah, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Where does it fit for you?
I don't rank Star Wars movies.
I can't.
I feel like very strongly about it. I feel strongly about not ranking them because no Star Wars film can exist like without the ones that came before it. So it's like not even a fair comparison after a certain amount of movies for me. Unless I'm evaluating them from the cool lens of a film critic, which I'm not because I'm a Star Wars fan. And even if I try to, I can't separate that. So I see it as like one big history and each film is like another installment of the encyclopedia. Because here's the thing, when I judge which Star Wars films I like the most, it's like, what am I talking about? Am I talking about the filmmaking or am I talking about like which era, which stories that they're talking about, you know? Like, I love the prequel era. Like, I love the prequels. I love the prequels. And I'm not going to debate someone about the merits of the film because either way, like, you could have probably made a film anyway, but I just like that era so much. So I like being in that time and with those characters. Do you see what I'm saying?
Very much so. I think that is that's pretty good way to think about it. And I think, you know, I tend to, you know, I'll debate in my head, I'll rank and things and that stuff, but I also feel because it's more than just films at this point, you know, and I'm also, but I'm very much stickler for canon, right? But I'm, you know, and I do like, I'm very much like the Disney era in that, you know, I like the comics and I like, you know, the TV shows and things like that. So it's now become more and more like, it's not as linear. And I think that, you know, I see where you're coming from. I will still probably rank movies, but I find myself now and I'm like, well, where do I put Mando? And that gets, then my brain falls out. So, but anyway, let's talk about Snoke's half.
Oh my gosh. It falls with such a thud.
So great.
And like from the sound of his thud, you can tell that like, I mean, his body is very heavy and dense. Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds like, I mean, the sound it makes is very, it's like one sound.
Well, and it's also, I think what's interesting about it too, is when you think about Snoke's role in this and that thud, you know, it's such a, there's two ways I look at it. It's one, or listen to it. One is, you know, it's this thud that is final, but it's also almost anticlimactic. And it feels like, you know, here's this character who's this, you know, in theory, there's the emperor, he's the boss, but he's just gone out like a punk. And that thud is just like, dunk, it's over. And then like immediately after this, where it's like, you know, the reaction that Kylo Ren has after is so like, yeah, that's the past, this is now. And you know, and I think that the finality of that funk really, you know, is an audio cue for what's going to happen. But also the other way to think about it too is just, you know, I don't know if it's intended this way, but when you look at now the whole collected picture, and you know that Snoke was just this like, you know, he was a puppet. He was, you know, that there's that funk also kind of signifies that like he was inconsequential in the grand scheme of things. He was just a tool, a means to an end. So, I mean, it's really
cool. I like that.
That these things, you know, and the sound design really, you know, gives you that feel, and you don't even realize that you're getting that feeling.
Absolutely. I really like what you said there. The thud is, it's almost humorous. It's like, oh, that's it.
It is. It's like, it is, I mean, it. I, when I was watching the clip that you had sent over, and I literally, like, you know, I lolled. I was like,
yeah.
Boom. And you're like, oh my
it's
God.
Like, oh, I guess that's not like a very dignified, like,
yeah.
I don't know. He didn't like force float. Like, there's nothing ceremonious about it. It's just like, nope. Oh yeah. Just like the wreckage of his body. Just
yeah. It's done. Okay. Moving on. Next. And then I think, you know, as their world is crumbling around them, and here are the, you know, his Snoke's two surrogate sons that he's, you know, kind of pitted against each other. You know, you then have them like, and they're bickering and this, and just Hux, I love you, man, but you ain't gonna win that fight.
He reaches for his weapon.
It's so great. I love it.
Really slowly, and then Kylo moves and he's like, never mind.
Yeah. I mean, Hux is so good in this movie. I thought, just as a, you know, they took what was essentially what I felt a bit of a one note kind of character and, you know, gave him, you know, he's kind of dopey and he's kind of, you know, like he's just there's a, he's not very self-aware. And
you're so right. Like the First Order and Imperials, they really do come off sort of as one note, like after a while. And yeah. Hux could have been just another, you know, just another random one that they put
exactly.
in there. But I think this film made him into something more, which, you know, some people did not like. And, you know, I guess whenever you take a stand on something, you're just going to have more polarizing opinions either way. And I just appreciated that Hux was something different.
Yeah, I did like that. Now, actually, so here's another thing, especially you being someone who is, you know, very attuned to sound. Adam Driver's voice is so deep and so dense. So like when, you know, and like I haven't watched Last Jedi in a while. I haven't watched any of the sequel trilogies. You know, I mean, the last time I watched one was when Rise of Skywalker came out. And so I haven't heard Adam Driver's voice in a long time. And then, like, you know, so watching that clip and then hearing him, you know, that deep voice, I mean, it's so amazing. And he's so, like, and it's really natural. And it's really cool to compare his voice to James Earl Jones's voice.
Oh.
I think they have that similar, just natural
depth. The gravel in the bottom end of it.
Yeah. And when he, you know, when he's like, Supreme Leader is dead, you know, and like, I wonder if they tweak his audio. Like,
well,
you know,
they do. There's significant dialogue mixing, of course.
Right.
But I would be curious. I mean, I would guess if I were mixing his dialogue, not really knowing how Adam Driver's voice sounds like. I mean, I should probably listen to interviews, but
very high pitched.
I mean, I'm sure it's not high pitched, but but within someone's natural range, you can boost certain frequencies so that are already naturally occurring. So you can emphasize his low end, which I'm sure they probably did,
right.
You know, cut out high end. You know, you can do like a high cut filter to cut high end and like things like that. And I do know that they meticulously went through and took out like extra breaths and extra like mouth sounds and like right. all those things. The dialogue. Yeah, the dialogue mixing is really, really good. And yeah. It helps, like, the thing that helps the most is to just have actors who naturally can do a good performance.
Right. And I think
to have less to edit. Yeah.
Right. And what's really neat is I also feel that his voice matches his physicality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like,
oh, and his physicality in this scene is so distinct. Like the way that he like lumbers off the
yeah,
off
oh my God.
Frame.
I love, and like, you know, I've grown to, like, I do feel he is hands down my favorite thing of the sequel trilogies. Like his performance, you know, I'm very critical of the JJ movies, but the one thing I always say is JJ can cast. He's really good at casting. And Adam Driver, just his, like, he's a giant of a man, you know, his features are exaggerated and then he's got this voice. I mean, like, it's, and then he looks like Han Solo from the holiday special cartoon, you know? So like he's got, he has that, and it's, and this, that voice really, you know, it's amazing. And it is an iconic voice, like a Darth Vader and like a Yoda and like a Jabba. And all three of those characters are, you know, very manipulated puppets slash, you know, modulation, right? So here's an actual human being having a voice that matches that of, you know, the fantastical of Star Wars.
It's really hard to come by, I think, increasingly, like when subtle performances are sort of more of the style, increasingly, you know, because, you know, with film, you can get so much finer detail, and musically also things like textures and all those things are more in vogue at the moment. But sort of the presence of a stage actor is right. Something that he certainly has. And I think a lot of Star Wars characters do, which is whenever I like watch behind the scenes stuff and I watch the actors, like, oh my gosh, to watch like Anthony Daniels and to watch the actors out of their like ridiculous costumes doing their thing. Suddenly when you see it coming out of a human, you're like, whoa,
what is that?
That is, wow. It like makes sense when it's coming out of like a gold thing, but well, wow, amazing.
There, it was funny because there was a promotional video for Bad Batch recently that had
Dee Bradley Baker with all the voices.
It's so funny. I was like, I was cracking up. And it's all variations of that, you know, New Zealand accent. And then, you know, and then you have Omega in there. So it was so like hearing him do those voices, all of them, was just hysterical and amazing. And him talking through like each, you know, the nuance he gives to each one of them. So that's incredible. Yeah,
I agree. And I found it fascinating talking to Anthony Hansen a while ago, who voiced Luke Skywalker in the first Battlefront game. And he was sort of talking about the nuances in making different voices. And it's a sound thing that we forget about sometimes as being part of sound design and being part of like the sonic landscape, but is very important and is something the sound designers really take into account when they're crafting, you know, the sound effects and everything. Right. And specifically in The Last Jedi, the sound designers had a lot of time to work, which is unusual. Like they said that they finished this film like way earlier than they normally would be. And they were able to just go into scenes that already had music, like already all that was already done. They were able to go into scenes and find like which frequency ranges were available basically to them and be able to craft things that fit and, you know, things where they had to maybe let the dialogue shine more, because a lot of the sound design game and the, not just sound design, but the overall mixing of all of the tracks, which there are tons of tracks, the mixing of all of the tracks, a lot of it just comes down to like separating the frequencies so that not all of your sounds are in the same bass range. Cause then you don't hear any of them with clarity. So if you have a lot of things that are like low pitched, then you're going to put in, chimes like the Vulptixes or something, something higher to cut through. And if you have just like high-pitched vocals, then you might put something lower because that will be available to you.
Right. Fascinating. That's really interesting. Because like, you know, when you, as you're talking about that, one of the things that it was last night, I was poking around on the iPad and I'm like, oh, you know, they just put Droids on Disney Plus. And I haven't watched that since, you know, like I watched that when it was on like airing, you know.
I've never seen it.
It's terrible. but I will tell you, the theme song is amazing. The theme song is by Stuart Copeland from The Police. And it's just a really cool pop song, and it's really great. So like, I highly recommend it. At the very least, just watch the intro.
I do plan to watch them all, no matter
The reason why I brought them up is, so I'm watching this episode, and I had to kind of, I got halfway through. I'm like, okay, this is not where my head's at right now. But the sound design, if an 80s cartoon is very different than what you're used to today. Right. So I do find going back and looking at a lot of that vintage, watching some of that vintage stuff, especially like, combing through Disney Plus with a lot of the old Marvel stuff that's in there. You don't realize until you have a comparison about, the advances in the sound. Right. So for instance, I'm watching Droids. It's Anthony Daniels doing his voices, but there's all these weird pauses. And it's just, you can't to compare that to The Last Jedi, right? Like, it's not apples to apples, but the sound took me out. And that was kind of a weird thing, where it's because like I'm listening to C-3PO talk, and because he's not being mixed the same way that they would in a theatrical film, it's a cartoon. And back then the cartoons weren't like what, like you wouldn't get what they're doing with Bradley Baker now. You hear 3PO's voice, but there's something different. It's something, and it's
I'm
not
really curious.
You're gonna go in there. You're gonna be like, wow, that's interesting. Cause like there's the, and it's not the same reaction when you hear a different, someone doing the voice, for a character that is portrayed by a different actor in theatrical, but like it is Anthony Daniels and he sounds off. And I think that is, you talking about how these things are, kind of makes me realize, I'm like, oh yeah, because they don't have the budget to do it the way they would for in a movie.
Interesting. Yeah.
And like it sounds more like just Anthony Daniels talking as opposed to him being secret.
Sort of like an audio drama.
Yes. Totally. Absolutely. He was pulling off the audio, the radio drama from oh my God. I love that. Like I listen to that quite a bit going to bed. But yeah.
I also haven't heard that, but I just listened to the Dooku Jedi Lost audio drama and that was entertaining. So now I'm
go back and listen to the original Star Wars radio show. If you can find it, it's out there. Like I used to listen to I need to listen to things when I go to sleep. So that was a really good one to go because it's fun. It's actually pretty good. For at the time, again, dating myself, like I when these things happened, I remember, they were big events and you only had one shot, right? Like, you could listen once or you could, the holiday special was airing once and, and it was now that it's on demand, it's interesting to go back and kind of dig into that stuff. And, oh my God.
I definitely will. And I'm excited to do so. It's going to be so different from, back to The Last Jedi. So, okay. So we get the Force choke and which is, there's an amazing sound there. Also, it's like the sound gets sucked out. It's sort of all the telekinesis sounds are just, really phenomenal. Yeah. We get Kylo Ren's theme, of course. Doo, 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 doo. And then the Supreme Leader is dead. Long live the Supreme Leader choking. We get this wide shot, like from Crait, or we see Crait from space. And then we see the surface of Crait, so we're like kind of going closer and closer, but all of them, these are like big wide shots. We see the vast expanse of rock, and then we get the shot of Leia peering out from the open door, and there's like that corona of light, and then we get the close-up on Leia's eyes looking out from that cloak, and the wind is howling. It's like spacious.
Yeah, and it's giving you and it's giving you this sense of place that is the sound portrays the abandonment of the salt world. And, and it is like, and it's, what's interesting is, it's Leia returning to a place that we haven't seen her at before, but we know kind of storyline wise that, she's been here before and what it means. But there is this kind of weird, like abandonment feeling that they captured, I thought, really nicely.
That's true. Because it was a former rebel base, and Leia's parents used to, you know, do stuff there. And I mean, yeah, I hadn't really thought of it that way, even though the expansiveness of it and the sort of the abandonment of it pretty characterizes that planet. Also, the fact that they're on watch and sort of waiting to hear something, it makes sense to have the absence there. But I find it interesting that the really wide shots of these sort of new places that we see in this film, Octo and this, are introduced in such different ways. On Octo, it's introduced with like the big orchestral score. It's like the Jedi Steps theme. It's like this beautiful, you know, luscious earthy music. And here it's like, and here it's the sound design introduces you, and it's like the howling wind, and it's, you know.
Well, what's cool too is if you think it all rhymes, man. When you go back to how this thing ties in, you know, where the threads of Empire.
I was just thinking of Hoth.
Right. So like, and that's that same shot with the, you know, through the binoculars. I forgot.
Quadnoculars.
The quadnoculars. Thank you very much, nerd. So the quadnoculars, you know, and it's that, and it has that same kind of quiet before you start seeing the walkers come, right? So this evokes that whole kind of feeling of just, it's quiet, the pause, the calm before the storm. And then, you know, and then it's the panic and the you know, the like, oh my God, oh my God. And, you know, sure, the music swells, but it's more about the voices that you're hearing of people like, you know, like freaking out while these giant machines are coming to step on them.
Totally. And here, like, first we get the hint of the TIE fighter sounds, which are, you know, like the elephants. And then we hear like the Vulptices, their little jingle.
I love their
jingle jangle.
they're gem dusted jingles that they.
Like, me too. Playing. The canon explanation is that it's like how they warn each other that stuff's happening.
Right. Exactly. Like, chimes. Trouble.
But shout out to Margie O'Malley and Ronnie Brown, sound or like Foley artists, for coming up with that. And then incoming. There's not only First Order, but then a shuttle crashes into the little room as they're closing the door. They start shooting, but it is Finn and Rose.
Right, let's go. And it's such a...
It's funny. They're like, wait, don't shoot.
Yeah, and it's... I really liked this setting too. You know, I thought what was neat was the... You know, you get a good sense of place with, like, they're in a big mountain, right? And, you know, so you've got what's happening outside that big door. And even though it's like, you know, it's a plot point, like, we'll just go through the secret tunnels, come this way, you know, but like there, that cavernous, you know, like, and it has a feel of the Echo Base, right? So there's, you know, there's that, it almost feels like this is the abandoned Hoth base. And what was it when I was watching the clip too and thinking about the connections, you know, like there's also an abandoned rebel base on Hoth, and there's abandoned rebel bases, and you know, like as just like a theme, you know, it'd be just interesting, like, do I want to see, you know, Mando go show up at the Hoth base? No, but just thinking about like what's in there, like, you know, the family of Wampas in there now, you know, or like what's going on in there? What are they doing out back on Hoth? So it gave me that sense of like, oh yeah, there's all these, it's this that abandonment that has happened, you know, and there's all these places out there. And also how incredibly irresponsible, because, you know, there are these abandoned bases loaded with ordnance weapons.
Oh, like, that's true.
Just left hanging out on some island, you know, or some planet.
So, oh, that's true. They didn't like bring in, they didn't exactly bring in their EOD to,
right,
you know, take clean care of the bombs that are still alive
there. Blow it up. But I guess good thing they did.
But I mean, the rebels are always on the run. And so I don't think they really want to keep abandoning, but they have to keep. And that's like the whole reason, like, Snoke wants to have his whole empire be on the supremacy, on the ship. Like, that's why they don't have like a solid, you know, place. Like, the Death Star was sort of, that was a target because it is in one place. But the Supremacy was supposed to be different and supposed to be like its own little like mobile planet. So, I mean, the base life, it's rough. Here, something I really love about this scene is how, like, then we start seeing, you know, we get the Resistance march. We get doon, doon, doo, doo, doon. And they start setting up their mobile equipment. And it's like, they're wiping off this dusty stuff. Like, I guess, like, what if we found, like, old equipment here on Earth? And, like, you think those old computers, you just wipe that much dust off and they still, like, turn on and are functioning? Right. It's hilarious. But then they, like, have these mobile consoles. It's sort of like it's sort of like the Raddus, but, you know, it's like their ship in a box.
Right. They're like, oh, open all the suitcases. Let's go. And like,
yeah,
whoop, like opening up their laptops and everyone's getting plugged in.
But they're like really clunky. They're like,
right. Exactly. Yeah. They're like those rugged laptops that,
yes,
like,
you know, it's like those hard drive covers. Like,
we found these old rugged heart, you know, laptops.
Like an Otterbox.
Otterbox. There's a Palm Pilot there. It all has that, like, and it's funny because, like, it's, you know, the tracking of time through tech in Star Wars, it's a fool's errand, you know, like, you're not gonna, like, you can't do it. So, you know, they're able to visually say, like, yeah, this is old stuff. It still works.
With the simple act of wiping the dust off.
Right. And like, da, 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 and then, and it is, you know, and I guess all those things would work over time, but, like, you know, time is different in Star Wars. So,
yeah.
You know, I get, like, you know, and you kind of just kind of have to let go about that.
Plus, I do notice that when I go to, I mean, I'm used to, like, laptops being able to do anything, but when you're using equipment for purely utility purposes, a lot of times that stuff is, like, proprietary and old and, like, good at doing its job, and it would not actually be useful to have, like, a new souped-up, like, Mac or whatever
to do that.
Like, sometimes all you need it to do is be a cash register and do that thing. And so it seems like it was ready to immediately start tracking and doing whatever software was on there.
Right. You could still use a cash register from 40 years ago. So I don't know. I mean, it was just like, I think that there's, you know, I do like how this whole, you know, standoff plays out. There is that feeling of dread and, like, you know, and you're another thing too, I think, is, you know, when we talk about abandonment, there is also that, you know, feeling of just you're alone, right? And, like, I think Rian Johnson did a great job with this throughout this whole movie of creating that desperation, and, you know, the numbers are dwindling, you know, and here you are now, you're like in this sweeping space. I mean, I'm gonna jump ahead, you know, but, like, when the handsome long-haired old man, I forget his name, you know, comes out and stands, you know, and he's waiting for it. You know, like, there's
amazing.
Just
amazing. It's quiet. It's quiet there.
And it's so good how that, like, that feels. And then, you know, bringing that all home, you then have Poe and his, you know, you talk about voices. You know, he's not the same as, he doesn't have the gravitas that Kylo Ren has. But Poe's voice is, like, you know, Poe's doing a Bugs Bunny impersonation. Oscar Isaacs has got the same, it's almost like, you know, this is a space guy from, you know, from Brooklyn. He's got the, you know, same way like Dexter Jetster has that, you know, like, hey, you know, what's going on? You know, Poe has that feel. And as a New Yorker, you know, you hear his, you know, whenever he's excited and he's like, hey, yeah, right, like, he sounds like a guy that I know, you know, and, like, there's just a, and for me, I just, you know, I like that about his character, and how he played it. And, you know, and I think that there's just a, you know, there's a franticness to him, but, like, I just like that his voice, it has such a Bugs Bunny feel to me, where, like, he's a wise ass, you know, and he's, you know, he's a punk. And I think that like he comes and he pulls that off really nicely. And especially this is the scene where he's kind of, you know, at this point, like, he's transitioning from, you know, the wise ass into the leader, you know, and, you know,
yeah, so I think this is the line where he, cause I'm not a Poe fan in this movie until this scene.
Right.
And it's when he is able to step up and be that person to be like, hold your fire. And he has the command. He's, even though he kind of got in trouble earlier and kind of got shown a little bit, he didn't shirk from his, like, he was still able to step up and be a leader. I think that's unique. I think when that happens to me, if I'm like in the doghouse, I sort of maybe feel like I'm not going to speak up after that until I get more comfortable. But he still has like his sense of what needs to be done. And in this case, like, hold your fire, don't shoot. He has the command. And then just, you know, the genuine, and then just his, he's so genuine. He's like, Finn, Rose, you're not dead. Where's my droid? And then like, when he's like, buddy, I'm so glad to see you. And my he's guy, just like, hey. Oh my God, it's so cute. Like, and BB-8 is so happy to see him. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, it, that's when I'm like, okay, yes, we do need people like Poe. We do.
Right.
And I think the movie was showing that. It was showing, right, you can't only have Poe types, but he still is like very valuable type of person to have on the team. And this is where it really comes together for me.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think his character, you know, they didn't know what to do with him, you know, like, I do like him in this movie. More so like than I, you know, like I said, I like the three leads I am very fond of. You know, I think each one of them, or not the three, you know, resistance leads. You know, the thing that I really struggle with as a fan these days is like, they didn't have a plan for these characters. You know, they were kind of, and it was such a disservice. I mean, I'm not going to litigate, you know, all the stuff that the internet's been done a fine and horrible job of going through. Oop, did you hear that?
Yeah.
Sorry. My next meeting's coming up. But there's this feeling of, you know, even though that they're lost, I think they were, these actors are good enough to where they're able to bring in, there's some growth that happens with them. And I think, you know, it kind of come when you think about their voice and how they react, and you think about their acting, if you listen to how, you know, they speak when, you know, as they go on their hero's journey, you know, these actors change their intonation, they change in their tones, and they change in how they speak with one another. Even though Poe will still come out like, hey buddy, how are you, man? And like, you know, he'll still, you know, now that he's kind of taken into that leadership role, you can hear the, you know, the concern in his voice. You can hear the, you know, where he feels the responsibility coming on. You know, when Rey becomes Jedi Rey, you know, there's this confidence, you know, as opposed to when she's, you know, trying to haggle with Unkar Plutt and she's like, you know, more not sure of herself. So I think that is, there's a interesting way.
So stepping into leadership.
Yeah. And a maturity,
and here,
too.
And here Finn has his moment too, where he's like, you know, no, they'll come. Like, they believe in Leia. You know, he's sort of, Finn is the one to give the sort of the pump up speech, right, here. And that's nice to see. I mean, Rey gets her moment later when she lifts the rocks.
Right. But it's just lifting rocks, man. yeah, it was really, it's really interesting. It was great, like, kind of coming back into this. You know, it's funny because, like, I did, you know, over on Star Wars Minute, you know, my minutes were early on there. So kind of coming back and revisiting here, talking with you about it, was like, oh, man, a lot's happened to these guys since then.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, let me just say that the themes that we hear in these minutes are Kylo Ren. We also hear March of the Resistance. And we also hear Rose a few times. Do, 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 do. And that will come up throughout the crate sequences. And Radke, I know that when you were on Star Wars Minute, and for those who, the few people who don't know, Star Wars Minite is the original Star Wars minute by minute podcast, and they go through the films 1 minute at a time, 5 days a week. And they were my inspiration for this podcast, going through the same 5 minutes, the same weeks. So I know that you were on the week with Hermit Luke, and you said that was one of your favorite minutes in Star Wars, period, was him drinking milk from the sea sow. And I actually agree with you there. And
you.
I know that you said there then that it was because of character development.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like one of my, that's like one of my favorite parts of the movie, is that whole scene with, I call it Luke's music video. It's like the whole getting to see Luke do his thing on the island, character development.
It is.
I'm totally with you.
It's the equivalent to the training montage. It's just the opposite of training. It's him, like, I love when, like, that scene, I mean, A, the absurdity of it is also, you know, what I think is terrific, but it really is one of those things where, you know, the way that he acts and the way that, like, he's a crazy old man. He's Han Solo's description of Ben Kenobi. And that's what he's become. And it just, it really flows nicely, and it kind of brings things around. You know, he's the old hermit. And you know what? You don't get to see Ben Kenobi do weird stuff.
And I wish we did.
Right?
That would have been so, yeah.
Like, I hope Ewan McGregor, there's a shot of him just picking
his nose. It's not just like weird stuff. It's also like really badass. Like, he pole vaults like across cliffs. Like,
right.
He's doing like, he just has this whole other side to him that we've never seen. And it's spectacular.
Yeah. And then, so then he drinks fresh milk. Like, well, I would love to, like, I may have said this on Star Wars Minute, but like, just to be there when he's on the island being like, oh, I'm hungry, man, there's gotta be a better way. Like, I've got an idea. Like, how desperate do you get before you are milking a sea sow? With that, I'll leave you.
Yes. Where can people find you online, Radke?
Twitter's the best place. Radke327.
I'll put
Twitter.
All the links in the show notes.
Yep. And go follow me, and we'll talk Star Wars and all sorts of things.
That sounds great. And listeners, thank you so much for tuning in another week. We're almost done with The Last Jedi. And we're on YouTube and all the podcasting platforms if you want to look for Star Wars Music Minute. Until next week, thank you so much for listening to Star Wars Music Minute.